Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Tommy Huang, the Merit Systems Protection Board's Chief Information Officer. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us. It's a return trip for you.
Yes, Jason. Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, last time we spoke, which has almost been 3 years, which is just an incredible amount of time, you talked about several specific priorities. Let's catch up on some of those. The first one I wanted to start with is you talked about wanting to put more business applications online. Give us a status check. How are things have changed over the last few years?
We've certainly done that. We've created both internally and externally. On the internal side, we have a MSPB intranet portal, and on there we have a slew of online applications that really helps with, you know, internal process efficiency and productivity. Among those, we have an office calendar that allows us to share appointments, hearings, when staff is leave or work at home, so that we know sort of what each other is doing and how to reach people. We have an online employee directory, again, to help the collaboration aspects. We have a learning management system, which helps staff build their individual development plans, IDPs, and track their training. We have a quick case application that really brings all the different legal and case data together into one place for our attorneys and administrative judges to see it very quickly. And we have other things like acquisition system, a help desk ticketing system, inventory system, project management system, time and administration system. All of those are online now. And we also do things such as registering for our own internal MSPB training sessions or internal conference sessions so that the employees can sign up. So all those things are done on our internal portal.
Give me a sense of that internal portal. Is this you said it's an intranet, so is it a log on through username and password or using your secure ID cards? And can you also, I know multiple questions here, digitally sign documents? So if I want to send you a document through this internal portal, can I do that?
Well, the internal portal is within our network. So when the employees come in and log on to the network in the morning, the portal, once they open up the browser, the portal will be the home page. So there's no additional logon needed since they've already been credited through the network. In terms of the documents, we keep the documents in our internal document management system. And within that system, we could set security to just one person, to a group of people, to an office, to all MSPB. So the security for the documents are done that way. And really, there's no digital signature per se that's needed because they're not legal documents in and of themselves.
That's a huge, because there's a big challenge across all government around, you know, insider threat. And is this, maybe that was not your intention when you put this on, but was that one of the byproducts, one of the good side effects?
Well, yeah, the whole, you know, access control is always part of the document management system. And in fact, it's big for us because our document management system is the central location where we keep all of our documents. But from an access perspective, we have many windows, if you will, into that document repository. So I talked about our portal, which has a window of access into the document management system or DMS. And if you look at our public website, it's the same thing. We have a web interface for the public, but in the back, it's the same documents in that DMS. We don't have a different set of documents for our public website. And later on, I'll tell you more about our mobile app, which is the same thing. It accesses the same DMS. So the DMS is central to all of our data or documents. There are no multiple copies made every time we need to present it.
I think that's so important because it gives people that sense of, one, it's security, but it also makes life easier. Now, could you open up a document and could a colleague open up the same document and could you see each other work? You see that a lot of times when you talk about, say, some of the other commercial document management systems that are out there where you can have multiple people working on the same document.
Right. The document management system as of right now is not built for real-time collaboration, if you will, but it does have version control where it knows if somebody has checked out a document, then you can't make the same edits so that there's some conflict and the multiple edits being made. So versions will be saved so you can keep track of that. The other thing that's really helpful on the DMS is our public website, which we redesigned since the last time we talked, is built such that the content automatically refreshes itself. So for instance, if we put out a new decision, which we do every day, once we save that decision to the document management system, the content will show up automatically in the website without a request having to be sent to one of my employees in the IT shop, and then they have to post it separately. It's an automatic process while removing a lot of the manual labor from that process.
And that's so important because, as you said, someone like MSPB or most agencies put up new documents probably every day, and have that push instead of a pull probably saves time, money, and lets people focus on some other things.
Right. And our website, you know, you'll see our decisions, our studies, our newsletters, our press releases, and it'll show the most current, like, 6 months, rolling 6 months, and it'll refresh itself every time new content comes on.
Very nice. Now, let me shift over. The other thing we talked about last time was the e-appeal system. It was in the pilot stage 3 years ago. Hopefully for you, it's not still in the pilot stage. What's the status of that program, and what are some of the benefits you guys are starting to see already?
Well, the e-appeal system is definitely being fully utilized. In fact, we just passed the 50% mark of documents coming into us being filed electronically through e-appeal. So to start our process, there's an initial appeal that comes in, and right now 52% of those appeals fiscal year 11 were filed electronically. And also the pleadings, which are the supporting documents that comes in from both the agency side and the appellants and attorneys, 53% of those pleadings are coming in electronically. So, and this is all people just using the system voluntarily. Now, we have started recently what's called a mandatory e-filing pilot for just the agencies and the law firms, not for individual appellants, because we expect that they may still have some challenges with technology and may not have access during certain times or for certain people. So, but for agencies and law firms, for 2 of our 8 regional offices, we have this mandatory e-filing pilot where they have to file their documents electronically. And you know, so far, that's been going very well. We have good feedback and haven't had any major issues. So I see that progressing forward, and that will increase the percentages I just reported. Now, in terms of benefits, if you look at e-appeal, it allows appellants to file from really anywhere in the world at any time, and they can file the appeal, they can receive the orders from our administrative judges and documents from the other parties to the case in a more timely manner through electronic distribution, so that as soon as it's out there, boom, they get a notification that it's there, they can log on to the system at any time, and they can see all the documents in the case, and vice versa, the agencies and other parties in the case can see it all as well. So there's a time savings, but there's also a cost savings just from the less printing, less copying, mailing, and for us, MSPB, all these things that we usually have to go through and storing those cases in their boxes, the boxes of these cases that if it was electronic, we wouldn't have to deal with it.
I want to shift back for a sec. When you talk about the mandatory e-filing pilots in 2 of 8 regional offices, do you foresee expanding that to other regional offices? Do you foresee all 8 regional offices eventually having this mandatory e-filing pilot?
Yes. Yes, we do. We want to make sure, though, it's going well and that we worked out all the kinks out of the system and there aren't any major issues. But you know, electronic government has been out there. The E-Government Act of 2002 has been out there for almost 10 years now. And when we work as a government for our processes, we're supposed to do as much electronically as possible. And we certainly see efficiencies and gains from doing that. But one of the biggest challenges right now, I would say, is internal. We have the mandatory e-filing. Things are coming in electronically, but some of our internal employees still like or prefer using paper, handling paper case documents rather than electronic documents. So we're still trying to find the best tools from an IT perspective to duplicate the process that they use in the electronic world where they feel that the process is more effective and more productive for them. So that's something that we're still looking at, and we're currently working on building a mobile app for tablets that our employees can use that may help them process case documents in an electronic world that's better for them.
All right, sounds like you're giving us a little bit of a sneak peek of your upcoming priorities, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back from break, we'll jump right into those priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Tommy Huang, Merit Systems Protection Board's Chief Information Officer.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Peter Johnson, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing's Chief Information Officer.
We have implemented an Oracle ERP successfully, on time, on schedule, with no hiccups, which we're very proud of. We've also integrated financials, procurement, manufacturing, supply chain management. We've also terminated a 25-year-old mainframe running COBOL. So we are now a 21st century modern manufacturing environment.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com.
Join IHEPA and NFL greats Brian Mitchell, Roy Jefferson, Brig Owens, and the voice of the Redskins, Larry Michael, for the IHEPA Metro Golf Classic, benefiting Fisher House on May 23rd at Westfields Golf Club in Clifton, Virginia. The incredible Dennis Walters Golf Show is also featured as part of this charity event. Register at ahepagolf.com. That's ahepagolf.com. And join IHEPA in support of a wonderful cause, the Fisher House.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Tommy Huang, the Merit Systems Protection Board's Chief Information Officer. Now, Tommy, before break, we were catching up on some of the progress you've made since our last conversation was 3 years ago. You gave us a little bit of a hint about a new priority, some mobile apps. But before we jump in there, let me pull you back again. 3 years ago, you talked about several business systems you want to move online. How many do you have now, and do you see a cloud computing fit into all this?
Yeah, well, we talked at the very beginning of a lot of the applications that we moved online, and I talked about the public website and the fact that we now add a social media elements, such as Twitter feeds, Facebook shares, RSS feeds, and things like open.gov. We put things like Merit Systems Principal of the Month and Prohibitive Personnel Practice of the Month, which really trains fellow employees out there about what their employee rights are so that they understand the process more. So all those things are being put online. But in terms of the cloud, we're currently in the process of moving our email system to the cloud. And we're almost halfway through our migration of the entire agency right now. So that's ongoing. We're also implementing a private cloud, if you will, by virtualizing our servers with the hope of eventually virtualizing our desktops as well, using things like virtual desktop interface or VDI, because we found that some of our more business applications that are more specific to our agency and business process, such as the document management system that I mentioned earlier, and we also have a case management system, they're not easily moved online because of the legacy nature of those applications. So we're planning on using VDI to access the applications and really move the entire desktop to a virtual online system in our private cloud. So that's our current approach for moving those things, quote-unquote, online. The other things that with smaller applications that we move to cloud are our FOIA, Freedom of Information Act system, and our survey systems. Those are now in the cloud as well.
Now, let me back up for a sec. You talked about your email system to the cloud. Who did you choose, and how are you going about putting that in the cloud? Are you Microsoft? Are you Google? Are you using somebody else?
Yeah, we ended up choosing Microsoft. We found that the integration aspects with our current systems, because our email system, our office calendar app, which I talked about earlier, our case management tracking system, there's some integration to the Microsoft applications, the way we build our documents. So we do have a lot of integration points with Microsoft, and we, after comparing the solutions out there, ended up going with Microsoft because, one, it's easier to port those integration points over, and two, we felt from a adaptability and transition perspective, it was easier for our employees to go over to Microsoft because they're familiar with the interface already. The web-based email is not that different than the desktop Outlook based email interface that they're currently dealing with.
And you said roughly about halfway through the migration. When do you hope to finish it, and how many people are we talking about?
We're hoping to finish it by the end of June, and we're talking about 225 people.
Any lessons and anything you've learned from this migration? Because a lot of people, a lot of agencies are definitely looking at email as a service, and they're waiting on the GSA contract to be awarded as well, and people to go through the FedRAMP process. Any lessons learned you would pass along?
Well, the lessons learned is you want to go through and you want to make sure everything is working smoothly before you take it on full force. There were little things that we encountered that we had to work through. You want to make sure you think about, like I said, integration aspects and not just, oh, it's an email system. And as long as email works, we had to make sure it works with our other systems that has touch points with it. But most importantly, I think, is for the users, for the employees, we want to make sure they're comfortable with it. So we did some piloting. We want to make sure that there are plenty of training opportunities and they feel comfortable with it, because anything that's a change like this is a big change. And we actually went beyond that. In addition to the email, we transitioned to Windows 7 and Office 2010 at the same time. So for our employees, it was a bigger change, and we wanted to make sure there were plenty of training available to them and make them feel like they could ask questions and follow up if there were any issues that they encountered so that they become comfortable with it.
And then you also mentioned at the same time setting up a private cloud and doing a virtualized desktop interface. What's your plans around that? Do you foresee putting something together, pilots have started? When do you see that getting going?
Well, right now we're in the process of moving a lot of our servers for our business applications to virtualize servers. So once that's done, we can then look at the virtual desktop. And we've set up basically a little test system, and we looked at it, but we haven't converted our or configured our business applications, such as the case tracking system, the document management system, more the generic Microsoft Office and those type of things. We haven't seen any issues with that. So we need to configure our MS3V applications, make sure it works, and then we'll start piloting it. And we usually pilot, you know, internal to the IT office, make sure that works, and then we'll get a few users to pilot it, and then we'll start, you know, slowly expanding from there.
One of the things about moving to a VDI and getting things going is that back end, as you mentioned, the legacy systems. You mentioned the document management system. You mentioned the case management system. Do you guys have a lot of legacy apps that could be a challenge as you move to the cloud? Or is it just those are the two really big ones? And because they're so central to everything MSPB does, you really have to be careful about how they work as you move to the cloud.
Yeah, those two definitely are the big applications that we have and that are central to our entire process, because you know, we're all about processing cases. That's really the crux of the agency, and tracking those cases and the documents related to that is very important. So we want to make sure those applications work. And I talked about earlier how it was very difficult to move those to online web-based type of application. There's so much effort involved. So this is really simulating that through the virtual desktop. And you know, until we try it, I can't say whether it's going to work very well or we're going to have a lot of issues, but I feel like it's a solution that will work for us.
Very nice. I think a lot of agencies are looking at the virtual desktop because I think, you as you said, you virtualize servers, and then the next logical step is the virtualized desktop. Are you guys looking at thin clients or zero clients?
Well, we're looking at, right now, virtualizing either the core applications such as those or the entire desktop, and really it comes down to, again, the usability and the user-friendliness of it. Are they going to have a lot of issues with that type of interface, or is it going to be fairly seamless for them once they get used to it? So we might go with the entire virtual desktop, and that certainly will help in terms of centralizing the management. It will make it much easier to manage for updates and things like Windows updates and things like that we can all do on the server. And once we get it done, then they'll come in the morning and log on, and it'll just be there. They don't really have to worry about it or deal with the update, you know, while they're working in the middle of the day. And applications will get updated, you know, when we roll out. So it'll just make management a lot easier. It'll make support a lot easier because the individual desktops won't be there won't be 100 different versions and configurations out there depending on what the user did and what was downloaded. So a lot of things will improve from that perspective.
All right, very good. Sounds like you got some work ahead of you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about your initiatives. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Tommy Huang, the Merit Systems Protection Board's Chief Information Officer.
The American Veterans Center invites you to the 2012 National Memorial Day Parade, presented by Boeing, Monday, May 28th at 2 p.m. along Constitution Avenue. Join veterans groups, musical performers, hundreds of active duty troops, and celebrity veterans and supporters of the military, including Gary Sinise, Miss America 2012, and Grand Marshal and Air Force legend General Chuck Yeager. The parade is presented by Boeing, with additional support from the Association of American Railroads and many other generous sponsors. To learn more about how you can see the parade, visit NationalMemorialDayParade.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Tommy Huang, the Merit Systems Protection Board's Chief Information Officer. Now, Tommy, before break, we were talking a lot about your priorities, talking a lot about the cloud. One thing you mentioned earlier on in our conversation was the development of mobile apps. Give me an update of what you're doing around mobile computing and mobile app development, because I think that's, again, another hot topic across government.
Yes, and that's an area that's developing quickly. You know, you see new devices come out all the time, new functionality and new capabilities. So we, I would say about 6 months ago, we decided to embark on the mobile app development and just see what that entails, because we have no experience at all. I didn't have any developers in-house that had that experience. So I basically deployed one developer and said, hey, go learn about this and see what we can do. And we actually put a mobile app out there in about 3 months. And right now we have app for the iPhone, the iPad, and the Android devices that allows our stakeholders to get to the MSPB information really anytime, anywhere. And the information comes from the same DMS system that I talked about earlier, but they can really get to that information much faster. So that was sort of our first initial attempt, and it was successful. So right now we're looking at expanding upon that, and we took the code that was open source code, and we found some got us there faster, but there were also some limitations in what we can do. So we are now actually developing the code ourselves in-house so that we can develop more capabilities and more specific to our process. And we replaced the iPhone app and use that for the iPad app. But now we're using that code to try to develop a internal mobile app for internal employee use, again, to help with the case processing efficiency that will be based on the initially iPad, and we'll see how that goes from there. And along with this, we're also implementing a bring-your-own-device policy, or BYOD, that is now more and more commonly heard across government, so that our employees can use their own device. And the benefit of that is they don't have to carry multiple devices around. They can use the device that they're comfortable with, that they like. And, you know, if they want to switch devices more frequently, they don't have to wait for the agency, which is budget restrained, you know, and it may not give them new devices in as timely manner as they would like. So I think that will give more flexibility, will make the employees happier, and we'll have more employees that weren't connected to the agency data and email, because now more people can do it.
A couple of things I want to go back to. The first one is, when you talk about developing apps internally, did that require you guys? You said you sent one developer out, said go get some training. They came back, developed the app. They were part of the team that developed the app. Have you now had to have more developers get training, and is that training easy to find?
We actually didn't send anybody to training. It was more of a train yourself. This day and age, there's a lot of resources available just by surfing the internet, and that's what this developer did, and he basically trained himself through that process. And yes, we hope to get more people involved, but right now with some of the other priorities going on, we haven't had the bandwidth to get other people involved. So it's still that one person right now.
And then you said you're looking at the internal app so employees can do more. That's going to be developed for both iPhones and iPads and Androids?
We're starting with iPads because when we talk about processing cases, you need more screen space and make it act like a e-reader so that they can review documents, and some of these documents be quite large. So it really doesn't fit well on phone devices, more on tablet devices. And we're starting out with iPad, and we'll see how that experience goes. More important, I think, is the user experience. Again, I talk about that a lot because in the end, that's what makes these applications successful or not successful. So that the iPad is user-friendly is what we'll start out with, but certainly later on, we may look at Android tablets and Windows 8 tablets. That's not out there yet, but those are things that we would definitely look at.
And then let me jump over to bring your own device. Again, something else we're seeing across government. How are you dealing with security? How are you dealing with the idea that, you know, so if someone has a help desk question or someone breaks their device, like, do you have a specific policy that you've written around BYOD, or is that policy on the way?
Well, we're in the middle of developing the policy because we didn't find too many readily available policies out there, so we're trying to draft one. But in terms of the security, right now we're moving, like I said, our email to the cloud. So initially, the devices will just be connected to what's in the cloud and not connected to our network. So that sort of separates the device from the data on our network. But they'll get to their email, they'll get to their calendar, they'll get to their contacts and the tasks list, which are the key things that people need on their device and readily available. So those are the things that we'll initially connect to. Later on, we might consider connecting to our network for other things, but we're not at that point yet. In terms of support, you know, people that have their own devices, they tend to be more comfortable with it once they have it. Yes, that means there'll be more devices out there and a whole slew of different companies and vendors and models. So we don't have the policy out there yet. We don't have experience with that. I'm not sure what that's going to look like, but we're anticipating that officially, we won't offer support. They'll deal with the devices the way they've been dealing with in the past, except for the connection part.
Very good. Sounds like you got a full plate going on. So, but before I let you go, because we're almost out of time, I did want to touch base with you on a few of the administrative pieces of your office. How many federal employees do you have? How many contractors do you depend on? And what is your IT budget for 2012?
Okay, well, I'll answer the contractor question first, because that's the easy one. We have no contractors. Everything is done in-house. And we only bring in contractors for very short durations when we have certain projects and we need them. But we don't have any contractors running around. In terms of employees, I have 16 IT employees, 4 that handles help desk tickets, both internal and external. And because of e-appeal, our external tickets and calls have actually surpassed our internal tickets. Last year, we had more than 6,000 tickets altogether that we had to support. And we have 4 employees that handle the infrastructure, you know, things like the network, servers, email, databases, security, et cetera. And then we have 7 employees that handle the development and the maintenance and support of our business applications. And we have 1 employee for QA, quality assurance.
And roughly your IT budget for 2012?
Well, our IT budget's slightly less than $1 million.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. This has been a fascinating conversation. And I promise, Tommy, you will come on before 3 years lapses again in the future. But you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today was Tommy Huang, the Merit Systems Protection Board's Chief Information Officer. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
To hear Senator Chuck Grassley tell it, the IRS has complaints from thousands of corporate whistleblowers, and yet he says the IRS is slow to jump on this.
When they know that there's money that hasn't been paid, they collect it, and then the collection of it, you know that there's an award to be made, make the award. And it takes 2 people to decide to make the award. You got to have the IRS commissioner sitting down with the Secretary of Treasury, and it ought to be a pro forma decision.
FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive.